The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
Now we step into Diabetes Anew with Dr. Danu. Good afternoon to you, Doctor.
Good afternoon, Tasca. How are you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm good. And I hope all of our listeners are good as well on this Thursday afternoon. And we are here on Diabetes Anew again. I mean, every Thursday we're here doing this on behalf of the Diabetes Association. Today we have a special guest with us. And of course, that guest is from the Trinidad and Tobago Heart Foundation. So we're doing a partnership collaboration on this very special episode of Diabetes Anew. But before I introduce our guest, as I usually like to do, I like to tell our listeners about what's going on in the association. This past weekend, we would have had our graduation ceremony for our sixth form interns, and our listeners would have heard from some of the interns and heard about some of the activities that we've been doing over the past few months with them. When we had the show last week, and of course, they would have presented everything on the stage this past weekend. Of course, we're very proud of them. They are 36 interns. They were from schools from across Trinidad and Tobago, and most of them are actually going to be starting medicine very soon. So this is the fourth year of the internship. There's nothing like it in the Caribbean, and of course, they would have learned so much from it. So I'm very proud of all of them, and the new internship for the fifth cohort, which is next year in 2026, is going to be open from January. So from January, you could be able to register if you are in lower six or in upper six. And of course, you could get more information on the diabetes pages for that. Other things that's happening in the association, of course, we have our HbA1c test. We would have had an introductory rate of, well, cost of just $40. That has now ended, but now you can get it for $60 for an HbA1c test at the Diabetes Association, and that's if you're a member. So you can become a member and get it for $60. If you're not a member, it's $80. And then you could come and get that test. So it's the cheapest anyway in the country, and it's a gold standard method. So nobody could really dispute that result when you get that result. So you could come to us and get that HbA1c test. Of course, we have other tests available, lipid profiles, and we have PSAs, and soon we're going to start CBCs and lots of other panels you're going to be available. And again, we're going to be providing it at close to cost price as possible for our members and of course our supporters. We have a lot of activities coming up, and what I'm most excited about is our 5K. So our 5K is going to be on the 22nd of November. And of course, this is Run That, sponsored by Tattle. And this event is going to be in Port of Spain. It's going to be on a Saturday afternoon, that's the 22nd. And we are aiming to have about 3,500 participants this year. So registration is open. You could go to tattlerunthat.org. That's tattlerunthat.org. And you could register there. You could also register at the Diabetes Association head office in Chaguanas. And you can get your package for our 5K. So I'm hoping to see everyone there at the 5K in November. So I think it's about time we could start the program and start the topic at hand. I know Bass will be joining us shortly, but I want us to get into this topic because it's September, and September is the month in which we focus on heart health. Because, of course, on September, I believe it's September 29th, it's World Heart Day. And of course, in Trinidad and Tobago, we have the Heart Foundation. And the Heart Foundation is the NGO that is part of the Trinidad and Tobago NCD Alliance, responsible for heart health and heart care. And we work very closely with the Heart Foundation. And we've been partners in the fight against NCDs for a long time. I want to introduce our very special guest. And he is, of course, Dr. Naveen Sicharan. And Dr. Sicharan is one of the directors of the Trinidad and Tobago Heart Foundation. Dr. Sicharan is also an American board certified internal medicine specialist. He's certified in interventional cardiology. He's also the clinical lead of the cardiac cath lab at the Eric Williams Medical Sciences Complex. He has postgraduate training, including serving as the chief interventional and structural fellow at the University of Vermont Medical Center and as a chief medical resident at the University of Florida. He also has completed a master's in clinical trials at the University of London. He is currently a tenured senior lecturer in adult medicine at the University of the West Indies in St. Augustine. He has over 70 publications in several prestigious cardiology journals, such as the JACC, JACC in Intervention, Circulation Interventions, Thrombosis, etc. He has reviewed for over 40 journals and currently serves as on the editorial board of Cardiology and Therapy, Frontiers in Cardiovascular Medicine and BMC Cardiovascular Disorders. He has quite a lot of other accreditations to his name, but of course, I want to say welcome, a very special welcome to Diabetes and You, to Dr. Naveen Sicharan. Thank you so much, sir.
All right. Hi. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for that lovely and warm introduction, Andrew. It's an absolute pleasure to be invited to be, conversing with you today on these critical topics. And again, I'm very happy to be here. And, hopefully our listening public can learn some important information about what we have to share about diabetes and heart disease. So, again, a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
And I'm so happy because thank you so much for taking up my invitation last minute, because I didn't reach out to you too soon. But again, I want to shout out Amit from the Heart Foundation for always being there and willing to collaborate with the association. And as I said, for this month, because it's Heart Month, and so many people with diabetes are also living with heart disease and vice versa, of course. We may discuss that in the show today, what comes first. But before we get there, and as I introduce the program, I would have told you about our internship program. And at the Diabetes Association, we're always very big on succession planning and always very big on working with young people, because most people think diabetes is not a young people disease, but of course we want to include everybody. So with that, the reason I'm saying that is because I always like to ask professionals about their career. Because there may be somebody listening out there that may be wanting to go into a career like yours, and this piece of advice might help. So I always like to start the program with that. So I want to find out from you, Dr. Sicharan, and I started by introducing you as a lecturer, as a reviewer, as a researcher. But tell us how you started. Tell us how did you start, and where did you start from the first time you wanted to actually become a doctor?
Well, thank you for that interesting question. And where do I begin, right? So I guess, the first impact was when I was a young boy. I was 8 or 9 years old. And my uncle actually, unfortunately, passed on the operating table in the United States while undergoing bypass surgery. Mm. And I think from then it formed the element or the basis of me, and my aspirations of being, of wanting to be a cardiologist. I was also fortunate to be surrounded by a couple of uncles who held influential positions in the medical fraternity. And, I guess as growing up and you see their influence on the general population and public, you decided, this is somewhere you can make an impact. And I would say lastly, before we transition, is that I felt a natural affinity and avidity to medicine. And I guess it obviously shaped and influenced a lot of my progression throughout my academic career in primary school as well as secondary school. Mm-hmm. So I attended 3 high schools. I went to St. Mary's College, Presentation College, Chigonas, and Hillview College. And then after thereabouts, I attended to UE St. Augustine at Mount Hope, which I spent 5 years. I finished there from 2000 to 2005. And from then, I progressed to the United States by writing my U.S. board exams or my American board exams. I spent 4 to 5 years at the University of Florida. And then I spent an additional 4 to 5 years at the University of Vermont. And I would say, these were some halcyon years. It had a tremendous impact on me because again, I was so a lot of luck on your academic voyage or journey. I was in close contact with some Wolfima scientists, and I think too, you know, being around these types of minds, these thought leaders in their field, it definitely drives you and pushes your ambition level to new heights. And, you know, hopefully you can make them and your family proud and do well by everyone. So that's pretty much in a nutshell the part that I took.
Yeah. And of course, you did mention there you had those influences from those persons which would have spurred you on to pursuing this passion. I mean, an unfortunate start, of course, but of course, for many persons, sometimes that's the inspiration when there is a need or they've seen a need because someone may have passed away or someone may have not received attention as they should have received. And that's often one of the catalysts for many young people to go into a particular field. But I'm so happy that you shared that, and I want to shift the focus a little bit towards the Heart Foundation, and I want you to tell us about the Trinidad and Tobago Heart Foundation. What does it do?
Go ahead. Yeah, sure.
What does it do? What are the functions? What are some of the activities that you all work on throughout the year?
Right. So another very important question. So the Trinidad and Tobago Heart Foundation, it's been around a long time. It's incorporated or registered in 1998. So we're coming up on almost 30 years of anniversary. Mm-hmm. It's spearheaded by Mr. Ronnie Bisesa, Senior Counsel, who's a reputed and eminent lawyer in San Fernando. And there's a team of 16 directors, all dispersed throughout Trinidad and Tobago. And together we form a nice coalition, and we meet pretty much a few times every year, quarterly, to discuss, you know, events that we can plan. We do have quite a busy calendar with the team strategy and the meetings that, you know, we develop, certain activities. And these are usually managed by our in-house manager, Amit, you know, who shouted out at earlier segments of the program. And he's based at Mount Hope, which is where we have our local office. So pretty much in, you know, partnership with several other entities and NGOs, we embarked on several activities. So one, we partnered with First Citizens Bank, doing an educational segment for young students of, again, heart awareness, as well as CPR, which stands for cardiopulmonary resuscitation, which is a critical technique that, you know, many individuals should learn or need to learn. There's also our...
Everybody should learn that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm a big advocate of maybe teaching this in schools. Mm-hmm. There's also, we have our 5K walkathon for during the Heart Month of September. And actually, we do have that coming up. It's on the 27th of September, so in a few weeks. It's on a Saturday. It's at Queen's Park, Savannah. And it's at 3 to 6 p.m. and it's being hosted by BAFA. Mm-hmm. So we've kind of subcontracted them to, you know, do the logistics planning for us on that aspect. And so that's also a key part of our calendar. And then we do also an annual Go Red for Women, high tea and fashion show. So we've actually just did that a couple months ago, and it was well received. It's usually hosted at the Hyatt. We had a great turnout, and you know, it's there's something for everyone there. So obviously the educational and awareness aspects, and then obviously there's the tea and the fashion aspect. So it's a nice marriage of fun and learning that's interspersed. So those are our three key things that we try to focus and concentrate on throughout the year, and we've been ably helped by our competent team. And, you know, I think everyone volunteers of their own behalf, and we usually have a very good turnout at events. But as you know, we can always do better and improve. Yeah. We're always looking to secure more funding and sponsorship.
Aren't you all?
Yeah, and, you know, these tough economic times. So, you know, it's a bit of a challenge, but it's one that we rise to, and we hope that, you know, we can overcome. So
that's, and of course, persons are always going to be able to see the Heart Foundation all over, because you also do all types of outreaches. So you might be able to spot Amit and some of the other volunteers. Testing, you'll do a lot of blood pressure testing, and I know we're going to talk about that very soon as well. But the Heart Foundation does quite a lot, and I'm so happy that they are part of the NCD Alliance. And again, moving towards World Heart Day, here is where highlighting this NGO and showing what the NGO does is so important. So let's talk a little bit about that. Let's talk a little bit about World Heart Day. Why is it celebrated around the world, or how is it really celebrated, and is there significance for the September 29th day, or is it just a random day that they choose, and what's the Heart Foundation doing for the day?
Well, you know, it's a very good question, and I'm not sure if there's a specific reason for it being commemorated on the 29th of September. I probably have to delve further into that. Mm-hmm. I know last year it always envelops my birthday, so I'm on Republic Day on the 24th. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a nice team up that I have my birthday, and then it's also my professional career, you know, it's being kind of celebrated on the 29th as well. You probably stumped me there, and I would have to touch base with Amit to figure out why.
Why is the 29th?
Yeah. 29th, you know.
Maybe if any of our callers know, they could give us a call and let us know if they think they know.
Yeah, provide us with some insight of why that may be. And again, you know, I think really what we've earmarked for this September would be our as famed walkathon of 5K. Yeah. And as I said, we've historically had a very good turnout, and mm-hmm. I think, you know, it's important to mention that, you know, when you do attend these 5Ks, you know, if you have any medical issues, you should probably definitely be evaluated by your family care physician, your primary care practitioner, even your cardiologist before you attend these 5Ks. Obviously, if you're young and healthy and, you know, there are no untoward medical issues, obviously you can feel free to participate. But that would be my one word of caution, is that if you do have medical issues, be sure, guys, to get clearance, you know, from your physicians before you attend these 5Ks, and not just specifically ours, but any in general throughout the country.
Because now is 5K season, and everybody's having 5Ks. Yeah. As I told you, we have ours in November. We have, so it's every weekend there are multiple.
Yeah. I you're right, and I absolutely have patients that almost do 5Ks on a weekly basis. Yeah. And you know, it's quite enterprising to see that they do that. Mm-hmm. And they have good results, and you know, I'm very happy for their efforts. But you know, there's also a little element of a safety concern that we have to be vigilant about. So
So Dr. Citron, let's delve into the meat of the matter now. Let's talk about heart disease, because this is why our listeners are here. This is why we want to chat about it, and we want to have this chat, and of course then we want to see how diabetes is related, and we need to take a break shortly, but I want us to start by you just telling us what is heart disease, simply because many persons may hear the term heart disease and may not fully understand what it means. So can you explain what heart disease really is, or when is the problem really referred to as a disease? So is it a group of diseases? What is heart disease?
Well, absolutely, you're on the right track. So basically, heart disease is a clinical syndrome or syndromes that basically refer to any disorders or impairments of the heart and its structures. So as you know, similarly with pretty much everything else, there are internal structures and there's also external structures of the heart. Typically and generally, when we refer to heart disease, not all the time, but most of the times, we really refer to the arteries of the heart that are being occluded or clogged by plaque. So this process is medically known as atherosclerosis, mm-hmm. and it basically refers to the progressive deposition of plaque on the arteries of the heart that supply the heart muscle. And usually when this process happens, you know, over a general long or gradual period of time, it's called angina, or chronic coronary syndrome. And if it happens and occurs abruptly, it's called an acute coronary syndrome, which is now the modern nomenclature for a heart attack. Mm-hmm. So they're both acute and chronic phases of this plaque deposition that happens inside of the arteries that perfuse the heart muscle. All right, so it's almost like your pipes are being clogged and you have to figure out quick strategies that effectively clear these blockages throughout the heart. Mm-hmm. Now, there are other aspects, as I mentioned. So typically, that's what most people envision, the layperson. There are also issues that can happen with the pressure measurements inside the heart. That's called pulmonary hypertension. There's also issues that can happen with the valves of the heart. That's called valvular heart disease. There are also issues that can happen with the actual structure of the heart wall and muscle, and those are called cardiomyopathies, yeah, in addition to the heart attack spectrum. So in a nutshell, I mean, it you know, we can spend days or two or symposia mm-hmm. discussing the semantics of it, but in a nutshell, that's pretty much what we refer to when we consider heart disease. So any one of those issues that's maladaptive and negatively impairs the function of the heart.
Yeah. So quite a lot of things can happen to the heart. And of course, just like diabetes, I think many people are under the impression that heart disease is something that you might develop when you're older. But we have been seeing in more recent times many young persons suddenly passing away. And when they investigate and they realize it's a heart problem that they've actually had, we realize that sometimes maybe it is that they may not have gotten symptoms, or maybe it is that they ignore the symptoms. So I want to ask you about how do you actually detect it? And you mentioned angina, and most people might think pains in the chest might be heartburn. So I want to ask you that particular question first. What are ways that someone could tell that something is going wrong with the heart?
Okay, so this is also a very good question. So basically, you have to consider or be self-aware that, you know, your body almost has internal warning systems. And basically, these can manifest in several different mechanisms or ways. So typically, what you'd expect with your garden variety heart attack is that you, if you're a male, right, and it's very gender-based, as dull substernal pain on mm-hmm. your chest. And most people describe it as a dull pressure. And some people even say that it feels like if there's a truck that's pressing on your chest or there's an elephant sitting on your chest. And that would be your classic symptomatology for an average male. Mm-hmm. However, with the current, current research into looking at other types of symptoms. So elderly folks, it's another subgroup that we look at, and they tend to get fatigue and lethargy and tiredness, mm-hmm. right, with their symptoms. So they may not get the traditional chest pains or chest discomfort. They get more feeling weak, winded, tired, and exhausted all the time. And similarly, for women, they may not have any symptoms at all. So this is a very concerning group as well, because sometimes they may have what you call a silent heart attack. So their mm-hmm. symptoms are much milder and gentler, and they're not as profound as you would expect, mm-hmm. you know, with the age-old adage of having severe chest pains with a heart attack. So we're very concerned about these two new groups now, the geriatric population as well as women, because they tend to also downplay their symptoms as mm-hmm. much as men, and the symptoms are not as pronounced or prominent as you would expect. So it's very easy for the physician to overlook or neglect these symptoms. Mm-hmm. And that's why you're right. It's really stratified or shifted into that acid reflux, category. Mm-hmm. So because the symptoms are so soft, the supervising physician, they're like, well, I don't think this is really meets the typical criteria for a heart attack pains. And it gets relegated to the back bench, which is acid burn, right? Or acid brash, as the common public refers to it. So I would say generally any discomfort, tiredness, shortness of breath, if it's new onset and it's not something that's not part of your usual constantly absolutely have it checked out. And we can obviously delve into or parse through the several different investigations, but it's something to really, you know, alert you and notify your physician as soon as possible.
Yeah. And I do want to delve into that. I do want to delve into how it is actually detected by the physician. And I want to talk about treatment. And of course, you mentioned heart attack there, but we really want to identify or catch persons early. We want to know what are the early warning signs. But we'll stick a pin in it there. When we come back, we want to talk about that. Tuska is in studio. And Tuska, let's take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about the warning signs again. And we're going to be talking about the treatment of heart disease. We're here with Dr. Naveen Sicharan. And we are talking about heart disease and diabetes. Let's take that break.
We are proud. We are resilient. We are Trinidad and Tobago. Happy independence from all of us at the TBC Network and Guardian Media. We deserve to celebrate. Join the TBC Network, Slam 100.5 FM, 95 The Ultimate One, 5 CT 105 FM, Sangeet 106.1 FM, Freedom 106.5 FM, and Sky 99.5 FM for Independence to Republic. 1 month to celebrate our achievements, our diversity, and evolution. The TBC Network will take you on the journey of a developing nation with captivating social media stories, radio podcasts, fun segments on the air, online challenges, and lots of trivia. Happy Independence, Trinidad and Tobago from all of us at the TBC Network and Guardian Media.
Independence to Republic Moment is brought to you by IBIS, a tradition of excellence.
Every weekday morning, Tuska Martinez brings you the stories that matter to you. On The Human Impact, tackling the issues of the day, exploring health and wellness that hits home, diving into powerful features, bold opinions, and a book club that keeps you thinking. It's thoughtful, it's fearless, and it's yours. Monday to Friday, 9 a.m. to 12 noon on Freedom 106.5 FM.
Speak your mind, Trinidad and Tobago, and let's make it count. The Human Impact, only on Freedom 106.5 FM.
We're playing Savings Louder with Extra Foods Plenty for 20. Nestle Full Cream Milk 6-pack, $20. Maggie Superduck, 4-packs for $20. Imperial Margarine, 3 for $20. Happy Chow Mein Noodles, 4-packs for $20. Flavors Carrots, 3-packs for $20. Swiss Barbecue Sauce, 2-packs for $20. Pringles Snack Pack, 4 for $20. Coca-Cola Cans, 5 for $20. And so much more. We're smashing savings for 6. And check out all our specials on social media and WhatsApp. Extra Foods, always extra for less.
Spellbound Caravan is coming to you featuring The Hive of Five, Saturday, September 6th at Gulf City Mall, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. Get ready to experience our thrilling interactive zone where kids and adults explore the UN Sustainable Development Goals in a fun and creative way. Test your knowledge and get the chance to win prizes and giveaways from our amazing sponsors, photo ops with the Spellbound hosts, and so much more. The Spellbound Caravan is brought to you by the Ministry of Planning, Economic Affairs and Development, Chris, Vital Supplies, Optometrist City, Mellow, Chef's Quality Fries, Garden Foods, and Happy Land.
The Big Board Impact just got even bigger. Introducing 3 new highway billboard locations in San Fernando, Chaguanas, and Paget. That's right, high traffic and high impact spots catered to catching eyes. Whether you're launching a product, promoting a sale, or making a statement, get flexible scheduling, real-time updates, and the most eye-catching and dynamic visuals with free artwork. Go big, go digital, go everywhere with the Big Board Company. 18 locations nationwide. Call 368-3754 for more information.
And we're back with Diabetes and You. And of course, we are here with Dr. Naveen Sicharan of the Trinidad and Tobago Heart Foundation. We're talking about heart disease and diabetes today on the show. And we've been chatting before the break about some of the warning signs and some of the signs that men and women may have separately, and even older people may have separately when they do have heart attacks. And I do want to open up the phone lines. And of course, while we're having our conversation, you can give us a call. Give us a call or send us a message. I know for our frequent listeners, you do know our phone numbers and our WhatsApp number, but I'll just ask Tosca to repeat them for us. And Tosca, you'll let me know if we have any calls or any text messages.
Sure, the number is 625-2257, 627-3223, and of course, 306-1065.
And thanks for that, Tosca. And we are here to take your calls. But of course, in the meantime, I want to continue with Dr. Sitaran with my questions. And one of the issues, one of the questions that I had for you would have been about early detection. How does a doctor actually know that someone is at risk of having a heart attack? What are the tests that are administered to the patient, or even how can someone for themselves know that they may be at risk for heart disease? What are the warning signs they could see early on?
Very good question again there, Andrew. So basically, it's on different tiers. So I would say, for the testing aspect, first, you would start with your routine blood investigations. And, typically the more advanced ones we would consider would be your, right up your alley, your glycated hemoglobin, A1C. We get a fasting lipid panel, which is to evaluate any dyslipidemias or cholesterol disorders. We would also look at your cardiac troponin if there's any evidence of a heart attack. So that's very highly correlated, your cardiac troponin, which is a blood test which can tell you if you've had a recent heart attack actively or within the last 2 weeks. And then there are a couple other more advanced blood tests that we can get. So that's just with the blood aspect of things, or the hematological aspect. Advancing a bit from there, you can do, there are a lot of other tests we can do to stratify your risk of having a heart attack. Mm-hmm. And these really, in Trinidad, for our setting, what's practical, it's called stress testing. Mm-hmm. So there are many different types of stress tests, and they range in efficiency or an accuracy of about anywhere between 77 to 92%. So there are many different ones. There are chemical stress tests, all right, which involves injection of an agent that increases the heart rate's contractility and speed, and it simulates exercise. And then there's the good old plain exercise stress test where, if you can recall, you're hooked up to a lot of monitors and electrodes and you're jogging on a treadmill. So those are the two types of basic stress tests that we have available. Then it gets a bit more advanced. You can have nuclear stress tests, which is not really available readily in Trinidad. And there's the new kid on the block, which is called cardiac CT angiograms, which are minimally invasive, high accuracy angiograms that can actually inform us of your calcium deposition levels within the heart, as well as if there are any coronary artery blockages, as we alluded to earlier in the program, or heart disease.
Yeah.
So there are different tiers of testing, and they all do have pros and cons. So it's obviously very important that you discuss these tests that you undertake or you're about to undertake with your physician, and maybe in this case, a specialist cardiologist.
So Dr. Sitaran, what about EKGs? Are those typically used to diagnose or used to detect risk?
Right. So an EKG, and it stands for electrocardiogram, it's really one of the first tests, and usually it's a baseline of a cardiac stress test. So it's usually like the first and foremost thing you do before you do a stress test. And it can give us and provide us a lot of information and insight of a person's cardiac condition. However, it's important to know that ECGs are about 70% accurate, right? So there's a big 30% gap or false negatives where it can, lead you into a false sense of security. But obviously it's better than nothing, right? Because it's giving us some information, but doesn't give us a complete overview or picture of somebody's heart health. It's just one piece of the puzzle, and it's not fully comprehensive. But at the same time, it's helpful and useful but you can't hang your hat on a single or solitary ECG.
Yeah.
Andrew, if I would just like to say this, you know, it's important that, you know, a lot of cardiac testing, and I see it all the time in private practice as well. You know, patients will just come with one isolated nugget of information, a cardiac troponin, on isolated cholesterol tests, on isolated ECG. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a lot of gaps in between. But mm-hmm. really, when you're assessing the heart, it's very important to have a kind of cohesive and incorporated view of all the tests. So, you know, that's why I would say, you know, it's important to have your comprehensive blood tests, mm-hmm. as you mentioned, your ECG with a stress test, maybe an echocardiogram, which is a sound wave acoustic test of the heart, looking at the valves, the ejection fraction of the heart, the strength, the power efficiency, the valves, the internal pressures. And then obviously you go up the ladder to the big daddy, which is called an angiogram, mm-hmm. which is not for everyone, but you know, so there's a stepwise approach and an escalation type approach of how we do the testing.
So I have quite a lot of questions for you still, Dr. Sitaram, but we do have some questions from our listeners. Tosca, I'll ask you to just read out the first question mm-hmm. for Dr. Sitaram.
This one is for Dr. Naveen, actually. Can you ask the doctor about causes for the uptick in young persons' deaths aged 30s to 40s due to blood clots within the last 3 years or so? Please and thanks.
Okay, so that is an amazing question. And I, you know, if I had to really answer that in its entirety, we would be here for at least a few hours, at least, right? So it's a great question. So there's several reasons for that. So I'll just dive straight into the deep dive. One, there's the genetic aspects, right? So right now, is a currently a lot of traction in cardiovascular research, and it's cutting edge, is that there are new cholesterol markers that are being discovered. So we're all familiar with your bad cholesterol and your good cholesterol. And now it's been recently discovered in the last maybe 5 to 10 years or decade that there are newer types of particles that can negatively influence or prognosticate heart attacks, right? So there's what you call lipoprotein, little a, in addition to your LDL, right, which was commonly known as the bad cholesterol. So genetically, there's a high predisposition, especially in South Asians, or, you know, what we would refer to as Indo-Trinadians in Trinidad or Caribbean South Asians in Trinidad. And they obviously have a higher prevalence of these newer, recently discovered disorders, right? So such as the lipoprotein little a. Also, just a caveat that I've actually did an emergency angiogram on a young guy. He was 42 years old. The youngest I've done, it's maybe 21 years old at Mount Hope. So there are a lot of young individuals that are having these life-threatening plaques that are being deposited in critical and crucial areas of your coronary arteries, right, which are imminently life-threatening. So again, there's the genetic aspect. We've also recently showed, and this is a kind of well researched in the literature, there's the emergence of a lot of unhealthy diets that are more prevalent in younger folks, mm-hmm. right? So the younger subpopulation, obviously, you know, these are the generation Z, as mm-hmm. well as the millennials, kind of coupling those two. A lot of them is fast paced, so you have access to a lot of fast foods, which are high in saturated fats and obviously low in fiber and the more essential type elements that you need in a balanced diet. So, you know, it's being kind of replaced in its entirety of having fast food meals almost every segment of the day, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And obviously that contributes to an unhealthy or inflammatory diet, which predisposes you to developing more and more fluid plaques. Yeah. Also coupled with that, you have energy drinks, which mm-hmm. can also trigger heart attacks as well. So I really urge extreme caution with a lot of these drinks, mm-hmm. these specific energy drinks, especially if you do it, you abuse it in terms of your overdoing or over consuming these drinks. We've recently had a young guy who's, you know, who basically had a severe massive heart attack in which his heart was stopped. We managed to successfully resuscitate him, and he had a critical 99% lesion in his heart arteries. So there's a lot of different factors, as you mentioned, coupled on healthy diets. There's a higher rate, and this is up your alley again, Andrew, of diabetes, high blood pressures, higher stress and anxiety levels as well, as well as depression. It's also a new risk factor. So we're seeing an onslaught and an avalanche of these new risk factors that are converging on these younger populations, and it's obviously manifesting with a higher rate and incidence of heart attacks.
Because I was about to ask you, that 21-year-old that you had to attend to, was he overweight, or was he of normal weight?
No, he was actually a slim guy. I mean, in that case specifically, he consumed, I'm not going to name the energy drink, but he consumed over about 10 energy drinks in a couple hours, which I didn't know was possible. The last time I had an energy drink was 2008, and my heart didn't stop racing for 24 hours, and I've never drank one since. So,
There's a trend to use an energy drink as a chaser as well, with mixing it with alcohol.
Absolutely. And you know, as you can expect, that's a perfect storm, because you have the negative effects of the alcohol as well as the energy drinks. So it's like, you know, it's a dynamic duo in a negative light. So
we have some more messages. I think we have a voice note, someone asking a question.
Good afternoon. What is the role of added sugar in diabetes and heart disease? Thank you.
Okay, Dr. Teacher.
Okay, I mean, and maybe Andrew, you might be able to help me with this from the diabetes aspect. Yeah. So, you know, added sugar, and I'm not sure if the caller is referring to added sugar as in just pure sugar or artificial sweeteners. But
I think it just means sugar, not artificial sweeteners.
Well, absolutely, that's a no-no. So as a cardiologist, a consultant cardiologist, we would absolutely like to limit that. In fact, there are a lot of new scientific studies that show on a really deep scientific or molecular basis that, you know, previously it was thought to be like fats and cholesterol that are really solely responsible for these plaques developing. Now a lot of studies are showing that your increased intake of these unrefined carbohydrates and sugars, actually there's also a pivotal pathway that where these sugars, if it's not being utilized readily in real time, it's being converted to also fat and cholesterol. So in a way, there's an indirect pathway to cholesterol formation from having added sugar. And again, that sugar needs to be deposited somewhere. Now, coupled with that, it gets a little more intricate and complex where, for example, some individuals, they don't have the gene responsible for excreting cholesterol, right, through your GI system. So the cholesterol that's formed in bulk or in mass continues to circulate in within the bloodstream through the vascular pathways of the heart and the body. That means the veins and the arteries, and it's continuously being deposited without it being, dissolved. So that is a problem with the added sugar. And, you know, in Trinidad, you know, I've had a lot of patients, you know, who said, you know, doc, it's just a little bit, it's not much. But, you know, it's a little bit of the concept of, you know, you take an inch and you give a mile. So you know, one doubles turns into suddenly three or four doubles by the doubles vendor. You know, if you're eating one pack of French fries, it turns into two or three. Even, you know, your common snacks that we use in everyday practice, cookies and donuts are common culprits. You may try and stop at one or half, but really there's no end in sight. So it's all about also discipline of trying to restrict your dietary intake.
What I like to add is, of course, I mean, people focus on added sugar, but of course, the sugar that is naturally found in fruit or the sugar that's naturally found in your food contributes to it as well. So it's really excess sugar we're talking about, consuming too much sugar. And as we know, consuming too much sugar means that if you're not using up that sugar, the sugar is going to be in circulation. And here's where we talk about HbA1c, and we measure the HbA1c as our listeners would know, as an average of your blood sugar. Now, if the HbA1c is high, that means the thing that you're measuring in the HbA1c, which is the glycated proteins, are also found throughout your bodies. And that glycated protein has been found to sometimes be the starting point of plaques, the starting point of atherosclerosis. So here's where we see that having high blood sugars, and there's a relationship between diabetes and cardiovascular disease, high blood sugars means that you are at higher risk of developing those plaques, higher risk of developing atherosclerosis, and again, developing all of the heart disease down the line. So I really appreciate that caller's question.
It's also, you know, just following up on that point, mm-hmm. if you could circle back here, Andrew, it's that also another important concept, you know, it's the severity of the plaque, right, in terms of percentage blockage, yeah. but it's also the volatility of the plaque, mm-hmm. right? So think of it like the concept of volcanoes,
yeah.
you know, so some volcanoes may be young and they're quick to erupt, and some may be older and stable. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the different facets of when you're considering blockages, as well as you said, and there's studies to show that obviously added sugar in a state of what you call hypoglycemia. So if your sugars run high, if you're a poorly uncontrolled diabetic, it leads to increased plaque vulnerability or lack of stability. So the plaques are likely to rupture and precipitate a heart attack or stroke. So that's another important concept. And again, this is a very important strategy of why taking your medications is very important to keep everything quiescent and, you know, very stable and dormant. So
and as your own medication, I want to ask, because we just have a few minutes left, I want to ask about treatment, because what are the treatment options for people who may have some sort of heart disease? Let's talk about medication. Let's talk about surgical interventions. What else? Lifestyle right. modifications. What can be done?
Right. So basically, first and foremost, what we would, you know, so obviously we would like to employ lifestyle modifications. So obviously having a balanced diet, right? So you have to limit red meat, fried foods, even dairy products. Exercise, you're looking at least 30 minutes of moderate exercise at least 3 to 4 times a week. Obviously, I think you should visit a physician before you initiate any exercise on your by yourself. Smoking, it's a critical risk factor, so absolutely you have to stop smoking, and if you need to see a psychiatrist or psychologist to assist you with that, you know, so be it, because it's very crucial that you do you know, engage in smoking cessation. Mm-hmm. If we kind of graduate to the next step, it would be medications. And, you know, medications, I think this basically concept flies over a lot of people's heads, is that, you know, a lot of the medications now are what you call novel generations. They're very cutting edge. They have high effectivity levels and better safety profiles than the older generations. Mm. So, you know, there's what we call now the Fantastic Four in cardiology, as well as you have your aspirin. So the joke of the day is an aspirin a day keeps a cardiologist away. Then you have your statin therapies, which are things like rosuvastatin and atorvastatin. Mm-hmm. The days of simvastatin and fluvastatin and pravastatin are gone, right? Those are the older, simpler statins that are not as effective. And then, you know, they're the new basically class and armamentarium of cardiac drugs. So you have your ACE inhibitors, your beta blockers, your SGLT2 inhibitors for diabetes, your GLP-1 receptor agonists, as well as your mineral corticoid receptor antagonists. So I guess what I'm saying is the prevailing concept now is that if you take, you know, these medications, this advanced regimen, and sometimes it is as effective, if not superior in some cases, to actually having coronary stents being deployed or implanted, which is what I'm trained in, and as well as coronary artery bypass surgery. Mm-hmm. Now, those two are typically considered superior to medications, but the medications, the classes are evolving so quickly and improving so quickly that they're almost on pace with bypass surgery as well as coronary stents, right? So, you know, it's very exciting. It's a very evolving and dynamic field. And this is kind of what drew me to cardiology. You know, it's research driven and it's always changing and improving. So, and there's a lot of clinical trials and studies that come out of North America and Europe. Obviously, in the Caribbean, we're a bit sheltered in terms of, you know, we don't have the capability and resources of executing these large trials. And then our population is completely different to what you would encounter in the US or Europe, you know, so that in itself brings different issues to the table. But yeah, go on.
I'm just saying, we just have about 5 minutes left, and there's so many more things that I want to get to know from you. And we have so many other questions from our callers, from our listeners. But I really want to ask you this particular question, because I've experienced a time when I've experienced a time when someone would have suffered a heart attack, and an ambulance would have come to them, probably a little bit too late. But even when the ambulance came, I don't believe the ambulance had an AED on the ambulance. And I'm not sure if any ambulance in Trinidad actually has AEDs. Now, if you go anywhere in any developed country, you will say see AEDs, and I know nobody might know what an AED in Trinidad is besides persons who may have done a first aid course. Tell us, why is that, and what can we do? And I mean, is this something, is this a reason why so many people are actually succumbing to heart attacks?
Yes, so AEDs, it's an acronym, and it stands for Automatic External Defibrillator. And, you know, if you go on your summer vacations, you'd see quite a few on the walls embedded in the airports in the U.S. and Europe. Maybe we have one or two in locally here. Can't recall, but or maybe I'm mixing it up. But definitely,
Sandy Hospital has, I remember, yeah. I saw some there.
So definitely, so it's basically a device that allows you to coordinate a synchronized shock to the heart to, quote unquote, and really, in essence, jumpstart the heart from when it stopped. So going back to our original point of when there are these severe heart blockages, when it occludes the coronary artery, it prevents perfusion of blood flow to the heart muscle. The heart muscle is basically, there's insult to injury, it's a bit shocked, and the electrical system becomes very disorganized and disrupted, and it goes into a seizure-like activity. And that is called ventricular tachycardia, ventricular fibrillation. Now, these are life-threatening heart rhythms, and it basically causes, or soon followed within seconds, by something called sudden cardiac death. So these defibrillators are, you know, strategically placed. And if you are able to deliver a shock to the patient that is suffering this episode, you might be able to restore a natural heart rhythm and get rid of that disrupted or chaotic, disorganized rhythm.
But Dr. Tijan, back to the first point, which is, are they actually on ambulances? And
I'm not sure. I can't tell you. I think there are one or two ambulances that I drove in the last 10 years since I've been back. I think I did see one or two, but I can't speak for all.
So is that something that the Trinidad and Tobago Heart Foundation should be advocating for? Because as we need to have them. And I'm saying this because at the very start of the program, you mentioned CPR. And right. We always see everybody has social media and they see someone get in an accident, someone get shot, someone, and everybody's around them. Nobody knows what to do. So you advocating, and we also advocate for everyone to do CPR. We work with the Trinidad and Tobago Red Cross Society, and they do the CPR course. And we're advocating for everyone to know about it, because, I mean, you could save someone's life.
Absolutely, 100%. It's something that really should be part of the
I mean, CPR only goes so far if the AEDs aren't, because I'm at a school right now and there are AEDs everywhere.
Right, yes.
I think it's something to do with legislation, I've heard. So I think the Trinidad and Tobago NCD Alliance, together with Heart Foundation, need to do something about this, try to advocate some way along the line. And of course, I'll be there to support. But
Right, absolutely. Having it in schools, you know, with the whole emerging concept of AI now, a lot of these devices are getting smarter on their own. So it's really minimal effort from the user. You know, you just really have to just put it on the person and it
tells you what to do.
Yeah, the algorithms will tell you. So it's a very good idea, Andrew, and it's something that, you know, maybe I can even mention to my elder brother. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a very good initiative to think of and propose.
I think that's a need we can, so it's something we could work on.
Yes, absolutely.
And with that, I want to thank Brian for taking your time to join me today on this program. And as I said, we have so many more questions, so many more issues we have to deal with to educate people listening out there. But I very much am appreciative of what we would have been able to discuss today, and I know our listeners are. I want to thank you, Tosca, for filling in for Bass today. I know Bass is out having a good time somewhere, so maybe he'll join us next week. But have a good day, everyone.
Tosca has a great radio voice, really.
What's
great.
That? Tosca?
She has a really good voice for radio.
Thank you so much.
She has a good face for TV too. But
we'll probably get to that point, don't worry.
All right, so have a good day, everybody, and we'll see you again next week, Thursday, for Diabetes.
Right. Thank you, everyone, for listening and, you know, providing us with your questions. And Andrew, feel free to reach out if you need to have me back on again.
Definitely, definitely.
Awesome. I had a lot of fun, so thank you, guys.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.